Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1961.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President in 1996.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
Good evening, and welcome to the broadcast on Sunday, the 9th of December, 2012. When JFK made this speech on April 27, 1961, I was a junior in high school. And in 1963, he was my commander-in-chief. Kennedy had foresight and realized the unseen hand in government. This speech will be covered in its entirety in a later broadcast. My name is Walt Stickel, and tonight's broadcast is entitled All Roads Lead to Rome. While this is my first broadcast, my guest tonight is a seasoned host on Inquisition Update on First Amendment Radio for the past 4 years. Because of his broadcast, I have been introduced to many good history books. I have read more than one book while he reads it on his broadcast. I am talking about books that are 500 to 600 pages. He is currently reading The Papacy and the Civil Power by R.W. Thompson. In preparing for this broadcast, I have learned to really appreciate his time, his work, and thankful for all he has shared over the radio for the last 4 years. It is my pleasure to introduce Tom Press, host of Inquisition Update on First Amendment Radio. Welcome to the broadcast, Tom. Please share a little on yourself and how you got interested in All Roads Lead to Rome.
Yes, good evening, Walt, and good evening to all your listeners. My name's Tom Press, and quite literally, I knew nothing about the subject of all roads lead to Rome until God revealed to me the meanings of the words in Revelation chapter 17. And that coincided about the same time with a relationship that I had with a Roman Catholic individual, a very, very dear friend of mine, who I shared many, many conversations with on amateur radio. And we decided that we would read the Bible together on amateur radio and discuss things. And immediately I discovered that we were reading from two different Bibles. I was, of course, reading from the Authorized King James Version of the Bible, and he was reading something else. And so it made it very difficult for us to read and follow one another because the words were so different. And one day I asked him what Bible he was reading, and he said the Catholic Bible. And one thing or another, I began to ask him, because I knew nothing about Roman Catholicism at the time, and I began to ask him particular questions about some of the peculiarities, as I considered them at that time, peculiarities with the Roman Catholic Church. And my questioning about his faith didn't meet with a great deal of appreciation. I felt I felt like he really didn't want to be questioned, and I couldn't really understand why. We'd had a perfectly spotless relationship up until that point, and I tried to put him at ease. And eventually, he tried to answer my questions, but he didn't really know the answers. And as our discussions continued on amateur radio, I realized that he was taking those questions to his priest or his bishop, and then coming back the next night with a pat answer. Well, I really didn't think too much about that. It didn't really bother me too much. He wanted to give me appropriate answers and correct answers for the questions that I was asking, and he went to a reliable source. And one thing and another, I began to ask other questions. One in particular was, what is this about papal infallibility? I'd heard of it, and I wanted to know what it was. And that's when he broke off all discussions and just walked away from me, cold turkey. And I tell you, I really lost one of the best friends I ever had on amateur radio, only because I began to question him too far about his faith. And come to find out, there was a controversy in his family over the Catholic religion. And so some of it later on began to make sense, because I was apparently touching on some of the same areas of concern that split up his extended family. But anyway, I was grieving over having lost one of the best friends I ever had. And we were so close in our experiences in life that we could almost finish one another's sentences. And a friendship like that is rare, and it was precious to me. And when he walked away from me for something as simple as that, I had to discover what was the seriousness behind this. I mean, it had to be something serious for him to just walk away. So I began to study Roman Catholicism. And I began to watch EWTN, that's the Eternal Word television network, on the satellite system that I was watching. It's the Roman Catholic Channel, the official Roman Catholic Channel. And so I was watching the Mass and all the pomp and circumstance of the Roman Catholic religious system. And then I began to listen to other programs having to do with Roman Catholic canon law and Roman Catholic doctrine and one thing and another. And I realized, and I want to pardon myself if there happened to be any Roman Catholic listeners here, but it wasn't Christianity as I knew it. It was something else. And so I continued to listen to EWTN and learn as much as I could about the Roman Catholic religion to discover what it was that was so sensitive to my friend when I asked him. And along about 2:30 one morning, I woke up in the middle of the night with a backache. And I turned on the television to watch. And there was this Oriental-appearing Roman Catholic priest, Japanese, I would assume. And he was literally reading from the Council of Trent that if you do not believe that the Eucharist is the blood, body, soul, and divinity of Christ, you are a heretic. And if you do not believe that the Pope speaks for Christ on earth, you are a heretic. And all of a sudden, I was getting some very, very disturbing information coming directly from a Roman Catholic priest. And I continued my research then, and especially in light of what I had learned of Revelation chapter 17. And I was off to the races, and I began to research other websites to talk about Roman Catholicism, and particularly Protestant websites that were talking about Roman Catholicism. They confirmed all my fears. that the Roman Catholic religion and Roman Catholic canon law, well, let's just put it this way. The Pope claims to be the replacement of Christ on earth, and that as Christ on earth, he requires that all the kings of the earth obey him, and that all of the people obey the king. So ultimately, the people are, and the kings are answerable to the Pope, both in spiritual matters and in temporal matters. And as my research continued over the years, I realized that this was none else than what was prophesied to come in the scriptures, the biblical Antichrist.
Okay, Tom. As a quick note here about the program, the listeners on the internet, this is a 30-minute broadcast, but the people who call in on the broadcast number can listen on the phone to the entire broadcast of 45 minutes. Also, since this is my first broadcast, I will not be taking any callers because of the time element on this subject, but feel free to call in and listen. The entire broadcast will be available in the archives 30 minutes after the broadcast. I would like also to thank my audio technician in the Northland for helping me with the audio files. Thank you, Jeff Roof. Tom, before we get into this subject matter, would you share with the listeners the current book you are reading on Inquisition Update and how it relates to All Roads Lead to Rome?
Yes, indeed. Again, the title of the book is The Papacy and the Civil Power by R.W. Thompson. The book was written in 1876. R.W. Thompson was a one-time Secretary of the U.S. Navy. R.W. Thompson was uniquely qualified, and it was his business, his life business, as Secretary of the Navy, to assess the greatest threats to our constitutional republic, both foreign and domestic. And his book talks about the greatest threat to our constitutional republic. That's what it's about. He identifies the greatest threat to our constitutional republic. He says the essence of his book in total is that there's no power on earth that could overthrow our form of government and invade this country or in any way take it by force. That the only way this constitutional republic and our way of life could ever fail is if it fell from within. And he said the only power within the country that had the power to overthrow our Protestant constitutional republic is the Roman Catholic Church. And he begins his book by laying out the basis upon which the papacy claims to be the vicar or the replacement of Christ on earth. And that is through the canon law. Roman Catholic canon law, in a nutshell, is a book of law that is written based on the decrees of the Pope since the beginning of the Roman Catholic Church. And it goes on the basis that whatever the Pope says, ex cathedra, in other words, from the throne of Peter, it is imbued with a quality known as infallibility in it, and it is as if God were speaking. And so, believing that the Pope is, as it were, God on earth, and when he speaks ex cathedra from the throne of Peter, that his decrees are as divine. And so Roman Catholic canon law is a compilation of these so-called divine decrees. And it forms the basis of every legal system in the world, including ours. Now, the canon law was built on what is universally regarded these days and throughout history, as a matter of fact, as difficult as that might seem to believe, is based on universally recognized frauds and forgeries, false decretals, they are called, or the pseudo-Isidorian decretals. Back in the year about 538 A.D., a man by the name of Isidore took upon himself the labor of of compiling all the decrees of the popes from that time to the earliest times of the Roman Catholic Church. And when he got done compiling all these papal decrees, he realized that they didn't go back to the beginning of the church. Excuse me, this took place in the, the 9th century. And they went back to 538 A.D. I misspoke. 538 A.D. was as far as they could go. And so they had all this time period from 538 A.D. back to the beginning of the church, which they say went all the way back to the Apostle Peter. And so, lacking any documented decrees of the popes, they literally fabricated them. And they're known today by Catholic historians, Catholic experts, as forgeries, simply made up. And they're very amateurish fabrications, and they're hard to defend, even for the Roman Catholic Church. So we have this understanding that's universally acknowledged that Roman Catholic canon law is man's law. And not only that, but most of it is just simply made up. And it even staggers the mind that the Roman Catholic Church still stands on this Roman Catholic canon law, and that the papacy still claims it to be the law of the church, when in fact everyone accepts this forged, fabricated status of these decrees. They still accept it as God's word, having been uttered by the Pope, the so-called replacement of Christ on earth. And Roman Catholic canon law now forms the basis for civil law. Roman Catholicism being a hierarchical church, the Pope being the head, and he rules over the kings of the earth, and no king rules without his approval, are to adopt Roman Catholic canon law and implement it, or to impose it upon the citizens of every nation through the civil law. And most people are never told this. And those who do know it are very, very secretive about it because of the heavy Protestant population in the United States. But they don't want the Protestants to question the basis for the law in this country. They would like them to just continue to believe that our civil laws are built upon the golden rule and upon the Ten Commandments, when in fact they're not. They're built on Roman Catholic canon law. And the best example of this Roman Catholic canon law basis is the Patriot Act and the additions that have been made to the Patriot Act since its passing, which simply strips us of all of our civil rights. And the United States Constitution was built on Protestant principles. It was built on the knowledge that during the Dark Ages, when the popes ruled supreme over the kings of the earth, that they forbid men to speak openly. You couldn't criticize the Pope or the King, or you would be excommunicated from the church, you'd be handed over to the Inquisition, you'd be tried and found guilty and tortured and put to death by the civil power. It was up to the governments then to carry out the sentence. And so when this country was founded, it had to at least, in order to get the Protestants to accept it, it had to acknowledge that a man has an inherent right to criticize both the Pope and the King. And that's where we get the First Amendment of the United States. But Roman Catholic canon law forbids freedom of speech. It also forbids freedom of religion. And it also forbids freedom of conscience. And we have this First Amendment protection of freedom of speech and freedom of the press and freedom of religion because of the knowledge of the Dark Ages. And so And so when we begin to see our own government passing laws that restrict our rights to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of association, and these sorts of things, we first need to suspect that Roman Catholicism has prospered and practiced in this country until it is, as R.W. Thompson predicts in his book that he wrote in 1876, that this is precisely how the Roman Catholic Church would overthrow our Protestant constitutional republic, our constitution, and its, and our way of life. Back to you, Walt. Are you there, Walt? Have I lost connection?
Hello?
Yeah.
Excuse me, I had somebody at the gate.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, Tom, before we get into this, Tom, I have prepared some questions, and I want you to take all the time you feel necessary.
Okay.
If we do not get through them, we can do it in another broadcast.
Okay.
Tom, how would you present tonight's topic, All Roads Lead to Rome, to a common person on the street that has little or no Roman Catholic history?
Well, I'd go straight to the greatest authority on the planet, and that's the authorized King James Version of the Bible, and I would describe to him the meaning of Daniel chapter 2. And I would show him that through the prophecies of Daniel, that from the time of Nebuchadnezzar, during the Babylonian captivity, when this prophecy was given, until the time of Christ, as Daniel lays forth in his prophecy, there would be four world empires. The first was the Babylonian Empire. The second was the Medo-Persian Empire. The third was the Grecian Empire. And the fourth and final would be the Roman Empire. This sets forth a timeline from the time of King Nebuchadnezzar during the Babylonian captivity of the Jews until the coming of Christ. Now, that forms a timeline and also, as another colleague of mine says, a template that you can that all of history has to fit within this template. This is a prophecy of God. And we have to acknowledge that God knew the ending from the beginning. And he told Daniel that there would be four world empires: Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Greece, and Roman. Well, we know simply by reading the scripture and simply by understanding history that that Roman Empire was in power at the time that Christ was born. And that same Roman Empire has been in power ever since. And it will remain in power until Christ returns. So we are literally in a global Roman Empire. It is Rome who rules over the kings of the earth. And if we do not believe that, then we're literally calling Daniel a liar.
Okay. When using the phrase, all roads lead to Rome, meaning there are many different routes to the same goal, in history, what has been the goal of the Roman Catholics and governments around the world? I realize this is a very broad question, but just briefly give us some history on Roman influence on governments around the world.
Well, history has shown us that the papacy, and this is one of the subjects we're dealing with in The Papacy and the Civil Power by R.W. Thompson, that the papacy claims sole authority on earth to pick the kings of the earth, to seat and to unseat kings. And it is through these kings that he ruled the Western Empire and the Eastern Roman Empire during the Middle Ages. And we also understand that this was the operation that was prophesied in the scripture, that it would be a Roman Empire. Now, many are deceived and believe that the Roman Empire is over. but we have to believe that it's still in power. Otherwise, God and his Bible is a liar. Daniel was a liar. Now, if one understands what happened in history when a king or a nation decided to rebel against the papacy, we know there was war, that the papacy pitted one nation, a Roman Catholic nation, against a rebellious nation, and they went to war to bring them back under the papacy's control. And that literally defines all of history, even up until the present day. And so Roman Catholics have their first loyalty to the papacy, seeing that the Pope is the Vicar of Christ. That's his title, the replacement of the Son of God on earth. Vicar is just the noun form of the verb vicarious, or the adjective vicarious, which means in place of. So the literal title of the Pope is the replacement of Christ. And when he speaks, it's as if Christ were speaking. A true Roman Catholic must believe that, and therefore his first allegiance must be to the Pope. And his law must be supreme over the laws of the land. And even the most recent encyclical of Pope Benedict XVI was written in 2009, binds every Roman Catholic on pain of excommunication to use their occupations and their avocations to help implement Roman Catholic canon law in every nation. And every Roman Catholic in this country is bound on pain of excommunication to make the Pope the king of this land. And every Roman Catholic in government passing laws that take away the rights of the people. You see, the papacy hates the government of the United States because the papacy, the Roman Catholic Church is a hierarchical church. The Pope is Lord over all, King of kings and Lord of lords. Beneath him are the kings of the earth, and beneath them are the people. People are to be governed. They are not to govern. But in the United States, in the Protestant form of government, the people are at the top. The kings serve the people, or the governments serve the people. And the Pope has no power at all. It's not even recognized as a power. And that's why the papacy hates the republican form of government. Republics popped up all over the West, the Western Roman Empire, with the Protestant Reformation. Republican forms of government were literally the product of the Protestant Reformation. The Protestant Reformation was built on the idea that the Pope is no God, and he's no representative of God on the earth. And therefore, Christ dwelt in each man. And so then all the power went to the individual man, and then they established, governments based on this law, that Christ is king and he dwells within his people, and his people pick their governments and hold them to account to Christ and his law. That was the basis for the government of the United States, and that is the basis why the papacy is destined to destroy this country one way or the other, by hook or by crook. Go ahead, Walt.
Okay, just disregard the noise you hear. That we're going into overtime now, so we got another 12 minutes.
Okay.
You've touched on this next question, but I think you could bring it out a little more. The question is, in America we have a constitutional republic. How does the Roman Catholic canon law compare with our American way of life and its effect on a republic?
Well, our republic gives individual rights, God-given individual rights. Roman Catholic canon law forbids those rights. The papacy says, I'm God on earth, and people do not have the right to choose their own God or their own religion. And people do not have the right to speak against God's representative on earth. And people don't have the right to defend themselves in a court of law, that if they're brought a charge against it, if the church or the civil power that is the servant of the church brings a charge against the people, then it is up to the people to acquiesce and come into compliance with Roman Catholic canon law. So canon law is the antithesis of God's law, and it is antagonistic to the Protestant Reformation. The two cannot exist together. They are antithesis of one another, as white is antithesis to black. And so the constitutional republics in the world, though they are grudgingly tolerated by the papacy, the Roman Catholics in every land are driven by this threat of excommunication. And to a Roman Catholic, that means eternal damnation, because according to Roman Catholicism, there's no salvation outside of the church, the Roman Catholic Church. So it is a spiritual imperative of theirs to do away with this bottom-up form of government that we have here in the United States and replace it with a top-down form of government. Now, I want to ask your listeners, does the United States, as it operates today, is it a bottom-up form of government, or is it becoming more like a top-down form of government, a hierarchical government, where the government dictates to the people, takes away their rights, takes away their free speech, takes away their freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of association, the right to habeas corpus, the right to privacy? You have to come to the realization, or at least the very suspicion, that Rome is the reason why we're losing our rights and why our government is becoming so dictatorial in nature and making us all slaves and turning it into a socialist state where we have to depend on the government for every necessity of life, including health care. Whereas before, the system was a man-centered system. Now, it is a papacy-centered system. The papacy becomes the god of this world, and the people become the worshipers of that God and dependent upon him for everything. The papacy is literally taking the place of Christ on earth, sitting in Christ's throne. And that's just the way it is.
Okay? We all can see how the Bible is under attack. Tell me who is the greatest enemy of the Bible and who is behind its demise and their goal.
Well, certainly Satan is the great deceiver. And the only way you can deceive someone who knows the truth is to corrupt the truth or destroy the truth. Satan has a human agency on earth to carry out his plan of ruling the world. And that plan cannot be accomplished so long as truth exists in the world, so long as the Bible exists in the world, so long as God's word exists in the world. So Satan's number one prerogative, number one imperative, is to water down that word or to make it say something entirely different from what it was intended to say. And this is where we get all the Bible perversions. And we come to find out that Rome is the source of nearly all of these new modern Bible versions. You see, before the Protestant Reformation, the Roman Catholic priests were the only ones who had the Bible, their version of it. And the people were not allowed to read the Bible. And they didn't know the truth. They simply had to believe and teach what the priest taught them to believe and teach. But the Holy Spirit of God moved men to translate the Bible into the languages of the people and then to print those Bibles and make them available to every man, woman, and child, anybody who could read. And when the Bible fell into the hands of the common man and he could read it in his own tongue instead of the dead language of Latin, they realized that they had liberty, that Christ had given them liberty And it all they also understood the prophecies of the Bible, the things that the Roman priests never talked about. Always said that it was, well, it was just too holy for you to understand. We must tell you. And they began to read the Bible in their own languages. They began to read the prophecies, particularly in the book of Revelation. And they realized that the church that they supported with their very lives was, in truth, the synagogue of Satan. And the man who ruled it, the Pope of Rome, was literally the biblical Antichrist. And they came out of the Roman Catholic Church, and they committed themselves to getting the best manuscripts of the Holy Scriptures and to preserve those scriptures in as many different languages as they possibly could. The English adopted the authorized King James Version of the Bible. That is that is God's holy word for English-speaking people. And the translators went through the same manuscripts and translated them into the other languages. And this exposes the truth. And Satan is exposed. His plan is exposed. And his human agency on the earth that is bringing his false prophecies to pass is also infuriated and trying to quench the truth in the Bible. And you'll find out that the Vatican is the one who has promulgated through cooperative third parties all of the so-called Bible perversions that have attempted to replace the authorized King James Version of the Bible. And because of these Bible perversions, unlike the days of the Protestant Reformation when everybody knew who the biblical Antichrist was, very few seem to know now. As a matter of fact, they don't believe that the Antichrist has yet appeared upon the earth, and they're waiting for a future Antichrist. And nothing could be further from the truth. He's been with us all the time.
Okay. In 1776, there was less than 1% of the population Roman Catholic, and the rest were 99% Protestants. The Catholics were the smallest denomination in 1776, and today they are the largest. Before 1776, they were not allowed to hold public office. Today we have 6 out of the 9 chief justices are Catholic, and there's no Protestants. Could it be said today that in 1776 we were a Protestant nation, and today we are a Catholic nation?
That's precisely the case. In 1776, this nation was Protestant. There was only one Catholic colony in the 13 colonies, and that was Maryland, named after the Virgin Mary. All the other colonies were Protestant. Today, Roman Catholicism dictates to our government what it will do. The chief politicians, and I stand under the scrutiny of all of your listeners and yourself included. All you have to do is check the religious affiliation of the most powerful political offices in this country, and you will discover that they're run by Roman Catholics. And not just Roman Catholics, but Knights of Malta, Opus Dei, and all the other militant organizations of the Roman Catholic Church. They're sworn under pain of excommunication to elevate the papacy to world supremacy. Their first loyalty is to the Pope, not to this country.
Hey, we got a couple minutes here on this one here. I think we could contribute their success to the 28 Jesuit universities, the 244 Catholic colleges, and 50 Jesuit high schools, plus their parochial schools in making America a Catholic nation. The Jesuits educate, infiltrate, and agitate. Their system seems to have been very successful. Please comment.
It's supremely successful. These Jesuit colleges and Roman Catholic universities and parochial schools teach every student this, that the Pope is the representative of Jesus Christ on this earth. And when he speaks, He speaks as he were Christ himself. So the message is clear to anyone who goes, graduates from these universities, that the papacy, that their first loyalty must be to the papacy. And these universities, colleges, and parochial schools are the incubator for the Roman Catholic power, the domestic power, the only power within this country that has the power to overturn our republican form of government and to put in its place a hierarchical papal form of government. And that's why we are losing our rights. And to assist in this effort, they're destroying our economy. They're pitting rich against poor, black against white, and every other, and emphasizing every other division in this country. And the chaos that will result from all of this will result in a new world order for this country. And they're not, what they're doing in this, in the United States, isn't just in the United States, it's globally. The economic crisis is global. Every other crisis is global. The world is weary of war, war fomented by this papacy, in manipulating the governments of the world and pitting one nation against another, just as he's always done throughout history. And what they want is global chaos, and out of that, a new order. The motto is, out of chaos, order out of chaos. And the other motto is, the end justifies the means. If the end that they have in view they believe is good, then whatever means to achieve it is also good. And in order to achieve those ends, they first must create global chaos and then a global order. And the new world order is simply the restoration of the old world order on a global scale.
Okay. Tom, to just, could you tell the listeners how to, where you are on the internet and from Monday to Friday in the Times?
Yes, Inquisition Update is heard Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time. That would be 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Mountain, and 8 a.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, www.FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And the program comes on, and it's an hour long. And I spend most of my time not just rattling off from the hip, but reading source documents to prove the thesis that I've just laid for your audience on your program.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for coming. And I'm going to ask you back and see if we can finish.
Yes.
Let's finish. And so with that, we're going to sign off here now, and we'll see you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Walt, and good evening to your listeners.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
I got a poor starting life, heading downhill real fast. Can't see the future, ain't recalling the past. I'm at the crossroad of life, stuck on the tracks. I can't go forward and I ain't going back. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, they say. You just got to live life day by day. Keep the faith, hold your head high. Soar like an eagle and fly. I've been neglecting my family, I lost all my friends. Can't tell you where the day starts, don't know where it ends. Burnt all my bridges and spent my last dime. I've got my life on hold for an indefinite time. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, they say. You just got to live life day by day. Keep the faith, hold your head high. Soar like an eagle and fly. Now I've decided to change this old life around by picking one foot up and putting the other one down. I'm following Jesus, I'm making amends. I'm seeking forgiveness from family and friends. Cause he's the light at the end of the tunnel, you see. Give it all to Jesus, he'll set you free. Keep his faith, look to the sky, soar like an eagle and fly. Yes, he's the light of the world, not just the tunnel you see. Give it all to Jesus, he'll set you free. Keep his faith, look to the sky, soar like an eagle and fly. Keep his faith, look to the sky, soar like an eagle and fly.